over the next 30 days to see what happens.
Your reference to Scott Warren, an activist leaving water in the desert so migrants won't die in the desert along the border. We want to thank you both for being with us. Ravi Raghbir, immigrants' rights activist, executive director of the New Sanctuary Coalition, and Marumora Vijayapandlo, activist with the group La Resistencia and Mi Gente. They're both fighting deportation after being targeted for their activism. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 4:59. Stay tuned for your 5 o'clock news.
Montana morning.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. The season finale features singer-songwriter Dave Stamey performing songs of the American West.
That's Dave Stamey on Friday, May 17th at the Reedwood Friends Church at 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. Doors at 7, concert 7:30 p.m.
Cowboy poet Tom Swearingen will open, and the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Committee will announce the 2019-20 season.
For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Sweetgrass County line, down where the Everstone flows.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a shooting was prevented at Park Rose High School.
An F-16 has crashed in California.
Taiwan has granted marriage rights to same-sex couples.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 17th, 2019. I'm Teresa Mitchell.
And I'm Liam Delta. An active shooter at Park Rose High School today was wrestled to the ground by former Oregon Ducks wide receiver Keenan Lowe. No one was injured. Lowe is a teacher at the school, where officials say an armed suicidal student has been taken into custody. Lowe is Park Rose's head football coach. In 2014, an armed student at Reynolds High School killed a classmate and injured a teacher during an on-campus shooting.
The Portland City Council overturned a decision by Portland Police Chief Danielle Outlaw and Mayor Ted Wheeler, finding that a Portland police officer cited a woman for jaywalking in retaliation for her filming police. Commissioners voted 3-1 to uphold the Citizens Review Committee finding in favor of Kristen Bowling against Officer Neil Parker. Bowling said she was filming militarized police vehicles massing in front of the Boys and Girls Club, which is located next to the North Precinct near King Boulevard and Killingsworth Street. It was the first time the Portland City Council overturned a bureau ruling on a complaint and upheld the citizen allegation, according to independent police review staff. Commissioners Joanne Hardesty, Chloe Udaly, and Amanda Fritz voted in favor of the citizen, with Mayor Ted Wheeler, who is the police commissioner, casting the only no vote in favor of the police. The Oregonian reported that after losing the vote, Wheeler criticized the process, saying it didn't seem fair that a majority of the council could overturn decisions of the chief and the police commissioner on what he called a personnel discipline matter.
Oregon has the fourth highest addiction rate of all 50 states in the District of Columbia, and Oregon ranks 50th in access to treatment, K2 reported this week. The statistics were taken from a national survey on drug use and health conducted by the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. The federal government in July 2016 expanded access to medicinal treatment for opioid disorders. Originally, it was only doctors who could prescribe the medication, buprenorphine, also known as Suboxone, to help reduce or quit the use of heroin or other opiates. The federal government expanded the options to allow nurse practitioners to prescribe the medication. Federal officials say this did not address underlying issues that are major factors with addiction, such as mental health. Dr. Monique Jones, medical director of the OHSU Avil Gordley Center for Healing, told KATU, quote, "You are actually setting a client up for failure because you're not dealing with all the other issues that may have led a person to misuse or to have an addiction issue. You're not helping them to ensure that they get into sobriety," unquote.
Tomorrow at noon, a new affordable housing project created by grassroots nonprofit groups kicked off its funding campaign with a party in Northeast Portland. The project is a collaboration between Living Cully, the Native American Youth Association, Hacienda Community Development Corporation, and Verde. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Jess Font from Verde about the project, the party, and affordable housing in the Cully neighborhood.
Las Adelitas is going to be an affordable housing development that includes 141 affordable homes and a community event space in the Cully neighborhood located on Killingsworth and Cully. And this is going to provide affordable housing for low-income renters in our neighborhood that would otherwise be displaced from this community by rising rents.
Verde has done other similar incredible things like this. Let's just start out talking about who is Verde. What do they do?
Thanks for asking. Verde is an environmental justice nonprofit, and we're based in the Cully neighborhood, and our goal is to build environmental wealth with our community in Cully, low-income and communities of color. And the Las Adelitas project, I should mention, is actually a collaboration with the Living Cully Coalition. So Verde serves as the financial backbone of a coalition that came together in 2010 between Verde, Hacienda Community Development Corporation, the Native American Youth and Family Center, and Habitat for Humanity Portland Metro East. And so this affordable housing development is led by Hacienda, our partner. But over the last few years, we have worked together with community to identify the site that folks wanted to turn into a neighborhood destination and build affordable housing.
Now, you have a track record of doing projects like this. In fact, I think your whole coalition there has a track record of, I feel like individually and together, building affordable housing projects and interesting community development projects without the interruption or the direction or the control of the city, which is interesting. So so you have an event coming up around Las Adelitas. What are you going to be doing there, and how can we be there with you?
Absolutely. So tomorrow, Saturday, from noon to 3, we're celebrating the community-led effort that has made the Las Adelitas Affordable Housing Project possible. And so we'll be at the site with speakers and music presentations and face painting and balloons and a large group photo to really demonstrate the community leadership that has been behind this project for the last few years, and use that as a show of support as Hacienda CDC is doing the hard work as the developer to bring together grants and loans and financing for the project. So folks are welcome to come out and attend with us. Again, the event is Saturday from noon to 3, and it's on the corner of Killingsworth and Cully in the Northeast Cully neighborhood.
Now, you've done a lot to develop that corner, and it used to be dominated by a semi-derelict strip club that took up almost an entire block of space. But a coalition of people also came, pulled that down, I think with the help of the city. Can you talk about that a little bit, too? I mean, that's your track record.
Yeah, I think that really speaks to the community-led effort that started this project. We knew back in 2014 that the community was really interested in turning that site into a neighborhood destination for families. It's right across the street from hundreds of affordable homes and near parks and near schools, community health clinics. And so when the opportunity came to purchase the property in 2015 when it went up for sale, community came together to lead a grassroots fundraising campaign of $60,000. Along with the Living Cully Coalition came together to pull together grant and loan funding to purchase the property. And so actually since 2015, the site has been repurposed by community organizing and events that have been hosted in the space, like quinceañeras and dance groups and other events are hosted in that space, even while the building was falling apart around them. And so we're really excited to move forward in this new phase that can continue to have a community event space as part of it, but really to give the community a proper space that meets the needs.
Okay, so back to your event tomorrow. Is that family friendly? Will you have food and music, or is that one of those things where everybody's wearing a suit and they have to watch someone at a podium talk? You tell me, what are you going to do tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely family friendly. Their real focus is, again, on demonstrating the community leadership and support. So we're going to have food, we're going to have face painting, postcard writing activities. There will be speakers, and that will include the Culleyhausen Action Team leader, so Amy Toos, as well as some public officials and representatives that have, you know, been along this journey with us. And then we'll have a great big group photo around 150 to really show the amount of community support that's been a part of this project.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
The local small business Indigenous Come Up holds its Indigenous Marketplace this Saturday. KBOO News spoke with Chance and Yuvia about what they do and what's happening tomorrow.
Chance and I are co-founders of Indigenous Come Up, and we sell Indigenous made and design arts, crafts, and jewelry at local powwows and markets. And in the last year, we also started organizing marketplaces, specifically Indigenous marketplaces. So this will be our second one at Rockwood Center. And Chance, you want to say a little bit more about what we do?
We're mostly just here to help our community, especially our youth and people who have been in and out of the systems. That could be the foster care systems, tribal systems, or court systems. And we just want you guys to know that there's also a business out here that's willing to help you with that and also help you out selling your art.
What are some of the issues that your communities are facing right now? I know we're talking about a marketplace, but what's really the issues at the base of what's going on?
Well, one of the issues for our specific community as Indigenous vendors and artists locally is that we don't have very many places to sell, and there are very few culturally specific events that we can sell at locally throughout the year. Some great news to that is that we just found out we got one of Metro's community placemaking grants, and so actually we will be organizing over 12 Indigenous marketplaces in the next year and a half. So we're super excited about that. But our communities face a lot. So specifically, the communities that we want to serve and why we started our business are young adults who have survived government tribal systems. These young adults, any young adult, you know, has a lot going on. But unfortunately, young adults that have had severed relationships with their families, which can happen a lot of different ways, like if you're incarcerated or your parents incarcerated, over twice the amount of obstacles and challenges that your average young adult faces. So our business became a business to offer these young adults opportunities. Chance and I'm an older adult, I guess.
an adult is what I like to call her.
Yes, kind of how we call it. I'm the adult, and Chance is a young adult. But we, you know, we created this business. We continue to create because we have a lot to teach each other too, and to support each other through. So it's not only about young adults finding a place, but also just creating a sustainable community where everyone has a place.
What is the role of creating then a retail opportunity for communities? Why is that specifically so key?
For me, it's putting, and like our business too, it's putting money directly into the pockets of folks and giving them the power to do what they need to do with it. But it also, culturally, we're encouraging people to continue our cultural arts. If we can not only enjoy doing our cultural arts, but also make some kind of living off of it. I think it doesn't only continue the practices, but it gives it more life. It gives us more energy. We feel like we're doing something for the community as well, you know, having a business and connecting with people. But, you know, with pretty much everything we do, we want our community. We're purposely not a nonprofit, although we support many nonprofits. We want control over the money. We want to put money directly in the hands and pockets of folks in the community. And so these marketplaces are exactly that. We make them low cost and low barrier events for artists. And we don't ask for anything else in return. All that money is for those artists.
These issues that we've talked about, how we can support you, anything that you would like to add that I haven't asked you about?
There will be a lot more ways to get involved, like if you want to volunteer and different things like that. Even with our business, we're still a young business, but we have just a lot of plans. We want housing. We want a community center for our young adults. And we want resources, and we want to make those things happen. So there's going to be a lot we're going to be continuing to build. And so please follow us on any of our outlets to stay tuned for more opportunities like that. But I also wanted to share with you how I mentioned the eagle and the condor, and in our mission statement and a lot of what we do, we follow the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, which in my indigenous language is called Pachacutec. And over 400 years ago, the Quero people of Peru predicted that now is the time of the eagle and the condor, where the indigenous people of the south and the north will come together to share knowledge. And in this time of knowledge sharing, the whole world benefits, and it's a time for growth, and it's a time to come back to our roots, our indigenous roots, for everybody. And it's just a beautiful prophecy. So much of it, it speaks to me. So much of it seems to be coming true. And so we just like to share that as much as we can. And so that's our logo, the eagle and the condor. And we just want to spread that news.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Parents, former teachers, a former school board member, and a youth advocate urged Congress to hold the Bureau of Indian Education accountable to fix issues at the Chamawa Indian School in Oregon. They testified at a House subcommittee hearing Thursday examining health and safety risks of Native children at BIE boarding schools. Parents and teachers say conditions at the school, such as lack of policies, poor communication, harsh student discipline, and lack of trauma-informed care, has led to mental and behavioral health issues, substance abuse, and even death. Youth advocate Tiana Casey urged for cultural tools and training.
Students do not see themselves reflected in the curricula or classrooms. From education models that prioritize Eurocentric interpretations of pan-Indigeneity to teachers that impose Christian religious beliefs on Native spiritual traditions, students feel alienated and misunderstood in the classroom. One student recalled a reflection paper in which they wrote that they would feel more self-confident if they saw more of their Indigenous identity in the classroom. At the time, the student was told, "The school is not going to change this just for you." This is unacceptable. All core subjects have the potential to include Native content. Native students must have access to Native teachers and educators that have the cultural training and tools to support their unique needs in the classroom and beyond.
Other witnesses called for local jurisdiction because supervisors and policymakers live in other states. They also say there's a need for community input and more empowerment from the school board. Mark Cruz with Interior Department Indian Affairs for Policy and Economic Development told lawmakers the BIE is taking steps. Cruz says they take claims at the school seriously and have a reorganization plan and strategic plan of action, which includes wraparound services. Lawmakers on the Subcommittee for Indigenous Peoples pressured for further action from the agency. Chamawa is one of four boarding schools operated by the BIE. The Arizona Republic reports high school senior Larissa Juan Sisseton Wapaton Oyate was turned away from her graduation ceremony Thursday in Surprise, Arizona. She reportedly was not allowed to enter the stadium because she was wearing a feather and beaded cap. Her family tried to get prior approval from the district, but was denied, citing school policy. The ACLU also got involved, urging for changes and religious freedom. The district, in a statement, stood by its policy and said the student was offered to wear traditional clothing under her gown. Leaders from New Mexico's Pueblos, Navajo, and Apache tribes met with Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham and her cabinet secretaries this week in Albuquerque. Healthcare, education, and water concerns were addressed at the Tribal Leaders Summit. Discussions also included language and cultural preservation. New Mexico has a cabinet-level Indian Affairs secretary to help with relationship building. Lujan Grisham says tribes have not been treated with respect in recent years, and her administration is working to change that. Tribal leaders also expressed the need to work together for the benefit of their communities. Flags on the Navajo Nation are at half-staff in honor of Navajo code talker Fleming Begay Sr. Begay served in two battles during World War II. He was later awarded the Congressional Silver Medal of Honor. Begay owned and operated a trading post on the Navajo Nation following his service. He passed away last week at age 97. Funeral services are set for Friday in Chinle, Arizona. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. At 8, it's From the Grassroots with Lenita Duke. Tonight's weather, rainy with lows near 50 degrees. Tomorrow, warm and rainy with highs around 70 degrees. Today in history, in 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled for school integration in Brown v. Board of Education. The quote of the day is from the NAACP's attorney in the Brown v. the Board of Education lawsuit, Thurgood Marshall. He said, "A child born to a black mother in a state like Mississippi has exactly the same rights as a white baby born to the wealthiest person in the United States. It's not true, but I challenge anyone to say it's not a goal worth working for."
An F-16 fighter jet crashed Thursday into a warehouse near the March Air Reserve Base in Paris, California. A spokesperson said the F-16 had suffered from hydraulic failure, which ultimately led to the crash. The pilot, whose name was not revealed, ejected safely and was transported to a local hospital with no major injuries. Warehouse owner Mike Johnson expressed his concerns for his employees and said that everyone had made it out safely.
Missouri lawmakers today approved legislation to ban abortion after 8 weeks of pregnancy, becoming the latest state to put severe restrictions on the procedure. The legislation passed the Republican House of Representatives this afternoon after being approved by the Senate early Thursday, and now heads to the desk of Missouri's Republican Governor Mike Parson, who's expected to sign it. Amid the current wave of anti-choice laws across the U.S., Senator Elizabeth Warren has introduced a plan to protect abortion rights. Denouncing extremists for throwing women's rights and the country into a dark moment, Warren wrote in a Medium post and on Twitter that advocates, especially those in Congress, must fight against the GOP's anti-choice agenda. Under Warren's plan, Congress would pass laws that prohibit states from passing their own measures blocking people from accessing certain medical procedures and medical providers from performing specific procedures, including abortions. According to Senator Warren, under the Supremacy Clause of our Constitution, federal law preempts state law. And because these federal protections would be valid on a variety of constitutional grounds, including equal protection and the Commerce Clause, they would ensure that choice would remain the law of the land, even if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade.
The U.S. House of Representatives on Friday passed the Equality Act, a historic development that drew cheers from LGBTQ advocates. Ronald Newman, national political director at the ACLU, said, quote, "This vote is a monumental step forward in the fight for true lived equality for LGBTQ people." As Representative Mary Gay Scanlon summed up in a Twitter thread, the bill, quote, amends existing civil rights laws to provide protection from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in key areas of public life, employment, housing, credit, education, public spaces and services, federally funded programs, and jury service, end quote. It now heads to the Senate, where there is a Republican majority.
In Massachusetts last night, police determined that three fires targeting Jewish centers and leaders were intentionally set. Two fires were set at a rabbi's house and one at a nearby Jewish center. Police said they were investigating the fires as possible hate crimes. No injuries were reported. The arsons came after two shootings at synagogues in the past 7 months, following an increase in anti-Jewish rhetoric among white supremacists and in the right-wing media in the U.S. The fires in Massachusetts come from the same week that police said the Dionette Mosque in New Haven, Connecticut was intentionally set. The FBI is now investigating the fire as possible arson. The fire at the mosque tore through parts of the building on Sunday, the seventh day of Ramadan.
It was a major victory for environmental activists this week as New York state regulators rejected the construction of a highly controversial natural gas pipeline. The billion-dollar pipeline would have run 37 miles and connected natural gas fields in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. The pipeline's Oklahoma-based operator, Williams Companies, described it as, quote, a crucial addition to the region's energy infrastructure, end quote. Environmentalists expressed concern that depending on fossil fuels might significantly set back the national progression towards renewable resources.
In Taiwan, the parliament has passed a law that will see the island become the first place in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. Amnesty International issued a statement that love has won over hate and equality has won over discrimination. Under the new law, same-sex couples are granted the same right to legally marry as opposite-sex couples, and many of the same rights and obligations applied to opposite-sex couples under the existing regulations in the civil code will be applied to same-sex couples.
President Trump issued a proclamation today directing the United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to negotiate with Mexico and Canada about removing trade tariffs. Lighthizer met with Mexican and Canadian officials where they agreed to remove Section 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from Mexico and Canada. As part of the agreement, the United States requested for Canada and Mexico to remove all retaliatory tariffs imposed on American goods in their countries. This agreement will set an aggressive monitoring mechanism to prevent the Canadian and Mexican governments from increasing the price of imported steel and aluminum. A press release from the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative explains that, quote, if surges in imports of specific steel and aluminum products occur, the United States may reimpose Section 232 tariffs on those products. Any retaliation by Canada and Mexico would then be limited to steel and aluminum products.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 17th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We welcome your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kelly Jeffers. The producer is Tammy Hapteas, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Teresa Mitchell. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste talk to author Tess Gallagher about her new book, Is Not. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10, it's Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein hosts and interviews former EPA staffer Betsy Sutherland, who resigned in August 2017 on the heels of Trump's recent plan to slash 31% of the EPA budget. And at 11... on First Voices Radio, Gerald Jerry Hill, president of the Indigenous Language Institute in Santa Fe, talks about the state of Native languages today and also the ILI's 9th Annual Symposium, Symposium Understanding Intergenerational Trauma, the Healing Power of Language. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Good night, Liam.
Good night, Teresa. Ray.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Republicans have been passing laws restricting access to abortion in various ways for years now. But Alabama has just passed what is effectively an outright abortion ban, stoking fear that one of these disputed cases will make it to the Supreme Court and the overturn of Roe versus Wade. Media are certainly covering the story, and often critically, but in a way, the conversation is sort of off-center, because people are talking about banning abortion as if that means abortion disappears. But abortions will happen, as they always have. The question is, what will they be like? For whom? If that's your question about the future, it makes sense to talk with the people who are doing the work